Hey, Lights, Camera, Barstool listeners, you can find us every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 380. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins. 380, but I actually recently figured out that this is technically speaking our 398th episode.
So we already because I wasn't counting real dumps.
Yeah, like our when we did our mini podcast early on in the history of this show, we didn't count them towards the total. And yeah, so we are going to hit 400 by September. So that's by next that's 2 weeks. Cool. But yes, it's Sunday, first day of August, and officially, an Italian is the fastest man in the world. Unbelievable. Just a great development. Congratulations to all Americans who identify as Italian. Big moment. Very big.
Jeff, Olympic recap. Like, what's been your highs of the Olympics so far? You've been watching them. I've been kind of
highs?
Watching them. Yeah, like the favorite moments.
Well, the 100 was a fairly large bummer. No offense to Italians everywhere. That's like swimming's still been a blast because swimming, like, they're always going to break records. Caleb Dressel, he's not Michael Phelps, but like he's a badass. He won the 100 fly, 100 meter free, and the 50 meter free, which is like a batshit crazy race. But
Katie Ledecky.
Ledecky was still great. She's still insane at distance, even though she's been kind of caught up by some other people. However, track's still a little tough. No Bolt sucks. Like, no Usain Bolt really, really stinks. It's taken a lot of the air out of the track meet. But
just like just having the greatest of all time be there. Yeah, I get it.
For three straight. And like, he didn't set a world record in the last one, but it was just like disgustingly fast.
Well, it's just his presence.
Yeah.
He's I get it.
He's a larger than life person, but I know the sport. Some of the new sports have been fun. Sport climbing is this week, which is them just racing up a rock wall. And then USA basketball is still going to win gold. People freaked out for no reason. They're going to win gold. They're going to be fine. No redeem team 2.0.
Yeah, no. We need a redeem team arc. It's going to be maybe we'll still have a redeem team, but it was like we didn't win gold hard enough.
Like, we didn't. Like, after all that, like, they still ended group play with the highest point differential. They still smashed people. So yeah, that's there's your Olympics update. There's a trailer that's been playing during the Olympics that I do want to talk about. It looks awful.
We'll get to it though. We talked about, it's not the one you sent, but Ken Jack and I talked about it last week. There's the trailer for the Uncommon Joe show or Unusual Joe.
Yes.
Or whatever the one. That looks really bad.
This is always the weird part of the year where, like, you get those summer dumps of movies and they are shows and they typically kind of suck ass.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they're typically pretty terrible. So today though, we are reviewing Jungle Cruise, a rock movie. We will talk at some point. I don't know. Like, I guess I don't know what we're doing next, but I guess we'll talk Stillwater or The Green Knight. The Green Knight is fucking awesome. Is just an awesome, awesome movie. Maybe my favorite of the year. But we'll talk about that coming up. But today we're talking Jungle Cruise. We have an interview with Andrew Rannells, which is a great time. And then we're gonna do a captain draft, drafting the best captains, the all time captains.
I watched the worst TV show I've ever watched last night.
What was the show?
A little bit of hyperbole, but it was the Prince on HBO Max. It's the new animated show about the royal family. I watched one episode.
How the fuck would you watch that?
Because it was there, and it wanted me to watch it. and it was awful. It was just it wasn't funny. The animation was absolute shit. I don't think anyone released that intending for it to be like it's gonna be the next BoJack Horseman, but it was pretty bad.
Mm. You finished White Lotus?
No, I'm kind of. Maybe I'll get back into it. I like to build a few more episodes before I go through them, so I'm not like going week to week on it.
Mm.
Or at least I'm going week to week where I'm like at the end of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I've been trying to watch more of the Olympics, but I was in the casino this weekend and ended up watching none of them except for the archery final. And shout out to Gazzo's. Gazzo's fucking just railed and beat the Italian guy at his own game. 20 years old, beat a 36-year-old.
Archery is one of those sports that absolutely doesn't come across as hard as it is on TV.
It looks like they're like explaining how like it's like 60 pounds of pressure that they're holding for like 20 seconds. And I'm like, yeah, I could probably do this. I could probably beat this guy's ass.
Shooting is the other one, because shooting, like obviously like skeet shooting and all that, or trap shooting as they call it in the Olympics, that's different because like people have seen that, like they shoot the pucks and or whatever, the clay pigeons, and people blow them up. But like the air rifle and stuff, those targets are like a fucking quarter. But again, you zoom in to see them on TV, so you really have no idea how hard that, like, it's it's insane.
They like zoomed out of the wide shot that they had of like the range, because like the entire time, like you're saying, they were just aiming at the bullseyes and shit. And I'm like, oh, that is so fucking far away. And they're hitting like a bullseye almost every single shot. It's crazy. It was fun though. That was a nice watch. I watched that and the tennis final, which was awesome. Not the actual match, but like, what's his name winning? The German guy, somebody's yelling right now. Is this something? And a couple other things. It was fun time.
Let's get the casino report though.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say there was a very important sighting for you at a casino.
Oh yeah, so there's a double thing here. First off, was at Hard Rock, and I met there, or met by met. I mean, I saw the Impractical Jokers there, and it was just Joe and Q that I could see. But like, we interview celebrities all the time. Like, you're about to have like an interview we had with like Andrew Reynolds later on. I was so fucking starstruck by seeing the Impractical Jokers. Like, I was sweating. Like, I didn't even know what to do. I was so thrown off tilt just like seeing them in person. And it was, I don't know if they were filming something or what, but they had a bunch of security guards there. I'm assuming that they were just doing live shows there for something, but it was very, very cool.
People bothering them or just yelling stuff at them, like in a friendly way, or were they being left alone, or did they have such a perimeter with the security guards?
They had a pretty good perimeter. They were just sitting on a craps table and they were having a really good time. They're just gambling away, like having fun. Although I want to note that I had my worst hotel experience that I've ever had in my life. I stayed at the Showboat. And because it was like a really last second booking, like literally the only one on the boardwalk that was left. And so stayed there. It was the worst hotel I've ever been to in my entire life. The door was hanging off the hinges. We came in, walked in, and there's a giant piss stain right in the front facing of the sheet, like massive piss stain. And it couldn't be anything else. Like it was very clearly like just deep yellow piss stain.
Could be apple juice.
No way, dude. This is piss. This is had to be piss. It was right at the piss level too. Like, it wasn't like it was up near the top of the sheet. It was right at like the dick level if you had it flipped the right way. And look, like,
I'm seeing a picture of this hotel. I'm not going to debate what you're saying.
It's disgusting.
Say which one it is again, because I feel like I'm not.
The Showboat. It was, they shut down in like 2000 something, and then they some guy reopened it and renovated it, but they couldn't operate as a casino anymore. So by renovating it, he inserted a massive fucking arcade, like a multi-million-dollar arcade into where the casino floor would be. And it was ass. And they put a giant ass like fucking boxing ring there, and they just didn't renovate any of the rooms, and all the rooms were terrible.
Wait, how could a huge arcade be bad?
It was just like not a cool arcade. It wasn't like, it was like,
they're not debating it. Just a bunch of crane machines.
It was just like, Adult Connect 4 on like a digital Adult Connect 4. Like, that's one of your marquee things here. Are you shitting me?
Is this
like
the one by the Margaritaville?
Yeah.
Oh no, this one's closer to Oceans.
It's literally right next to Hard Rock and Oceans. Yeah. But yeah, we basically just stayed there and just like left and went to Hard Rock and Oceans the entire time.
Shit stinks.
It was one of the nastiest rooms I've ever been in my entire life. The couch, the bed was like 50 years old. There's just a lone couch in there covered in random protein stains, as Tro Bolins would say. and just everything about it. It was like literally stepping out of into a place frozen in time from 1987. It was vile.
You didn't get absolutely to play gross. Any time. What's the name of the shooting game from like 1995 with the laser guns? Time cops.
The Terminator one. I like that laser game.
Yeah, Terminator was kind of cool.
You're talking about the Alien one. Okay, I know what you're talking about.
We forgot to talk about the fact that a major movie sequel was announced in Atlantic City at MobCon a couple weeks ago.
What was that?
Gotti 2 with Armand Asante.
Yeah, that's right.
Gotcha. The idea of the title Gotti 2 just makes me laugh.
They're dropping a sixth burrow.
Also because
a different Gotti.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like Gotti 2 is a tough follow because that's a follow of the 96 movie with Armand Asante, not the fucking John Travolta one, also titled Gotti.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so the Gotti 2 is the sequel to the 96.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Not Travolta Gotti. Yeah.
Oh boy. MobCon. That'd be kind of an interesting thing to go to, I guess.
That'd be awesome.
We had one of our coworkers, Glennie Balls, when he met Big Time Tommy, for those who know who that is.
Instagram's Big Time Tommy.
But yeah, cons are cool.
What are the hot balloon con? No.
Hot air balloon?
Yeah, like hot air balloon con. I'm avoiding that.
Just like they're just doing a demo. It's like listen to the Predator 3000 engine. Fire redhead. Engine on the
the redhead like, days festival. What happens if you show up and you don't have red hair? Like, are you actually not allowed in?
Star Wars Celebration.
I thought there was an episode of South Park.
Celebration's back next year in Anaheim.
Okay. Yeah, true. Ventriloquist Con, I'd rather just die. There's not a chance in hell you'd spot me at Ventriloquist Con. It's like what do they do there? It's just hanging out with Jeff Dunham and what's his name from Vegas?
Wait, Ventriloquist.
Is it a trade show? A trade show. It's a trade show for the ventriloquism industry.
That's so horrifying. That's got to be terrifying.
A bunch of like dummy vendors. That's like, you know, they're showing out like the new, like these are the new arms on the new dummy. As you can see, the 360 degree range of motion on it.
I love the prop on the description of it. Look no further than Erlanger, Kentucky, just 15 minutes outside of Cincinnati. It's the home of the actual con, which includes performances from highly skilled ventriloquists like Australian stand-up Darren Carr, as well as other open mics for new open mic at Ventriloquist Con. That's like the worst fucking place to be on the entire earth.
It would be pretty. Even imagine. It'd be pretty funny if you went there and everyone there just hated Jeff Dunham.
I mean, total
traitor to the.
There's got to be. I feel like that could be the case, right? Like that could be like. Yeah. Because there's examples of that. I can't think of anything, though, where like someone who's maybe like a normie's not the right word, but not like a diehard who thinks that X person is the best. But then you talk to the diehard, it's like, no, fuck that. Not the best. I feel like that's done.
I can see that for sure.
Yeah, I feel like people probably hate Terry Fader, too, the first winner of America's Got Talent.
Didn't he die?
Terry Fader?
No, we've talked about him many times.
One of the Vegas guys, it was Danny Gans, I think, who passed away. Is who I'm thinking of. Yeah. He had a residency at the Mandalay Bay, I think, and he passed away like 12 years ago. And in my head, I'm just not able to correctly remember it.
I can picture like a Tim Robinson level skit where like he has the open mic at Ventriloquist Con, but he can't figure out how to get the thing to look like he's not talking. And he's just stuck on the open mic. Oh, he's really fucking funny.
In 2008, he signed a Terry Fader, who won America's Got Talent. He signed a $1.5 million contract with the Las Vegas Hilton to do three shows in 08. And then after that, he signed a 5-year contract with the Mirage in Vegas. Do you know how much money it was worth? Ventriloquist.
$35 million a year.
Ken Jack?
$50 million.
$100 million.
How many years?
5-year, $100 million deal. Like he's a fucking quarterback. Like, yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
What the absolute fuck, dude?
It's just stunning money.
What a rate. I mean, he just set the bar for Ventriloquist, though. Apparently they're a hot property.
I'd love just to start a Ventriloquist channel on cable. The whole channel is just like you have like your sports center in the morning, but it's just updates on the ventriloquism, the ventriloquy. Is that a word that's been going on?
venting. And this one was called like VentCon or something, or Venthaven International Con.
Here's the thing about ventriloquism. Very objectively impressive when done right. Right?
Like, yeah. Yes.
But also diminishing returns on watching ventriloquism. Right? Like where you just like you feel like you've clocked in enough flight hours of ventriloquism and you're kind of just like, got it.
There's also a sub convention of celebrity impersonators, which are actually very funny.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Bad, like not bad, no, because bad ventriloquism is probably very funny unintentionally.
Yes.
But like mediocre ventriloquism is just by watching paint dry. That's got to be awful.
Mm-hmm.
One time I was in Vegas and, you know, it was in my early 20s and it was like, I couldn't really afford to go to Vegas, but I was still there. And I was just walking by Harrah's and they gave me some tickets to go see a comedy show in Harrah's. And I was like, okay. I went in to see the free comedy show and it was like, it was in like a section of just like a regular like ballroom conference room roped off. And it was kind of funny, but it definitely wasn't your like Vegas custom built Cirque du Soleil Zumanity type venue. It was just a ballroom. And that's like one of the three Vegas shows I've actually seen.
Yeah.
I want you to guess.
I don't know why I told that story.
I'm glad I know it now. It's a good fact to know. I want you to guess and I'll do news, the six people, when you search Jeff Dunham, it says related to Jeff Dunham and Terry Fader, the six people that pop up.
Dane Cook.
Nope.
One of the Jeff Foxworthy.
Nope.
Okay.
Is it none of the blue collar comedy guys?
None of them are on there.
Dude, that would be my go-to would be the blue collar comedy guys.
That's all like the same era to me. Yeah.
Because wasn't he in a movie? Wasn't Jeff Dunham in a movie with, he was in Delta Farce.
With who?
Delta Farce was like all those guys.
With Larry the Cable Guy and DJ Qualls.
Well, it was Larry the Cable Guy and Bill Engvall. It was two fists, whatever the ratio is. Yeah. Jeff, I don't know. I don't think about it.
Here's the six. Ready? I feel like a couple of these. I mean, why? Sebastian Maniscalco and Amy Schumer. I mean, that makes sense.
They're comedians.
Jim Gaffigan. Okay. Gabriel Iglesias. Fluffy.
Okay.
Kevin Hart.
Well, in terms of like earnings, right? Like Jeff Dunham has to be like top. I mean, if you looked up like highest earning stand up comedians, Jeff Dunham would be near the top of the list, right?
And then Jerry Seinfeld.
Wow,
I feel like we're giving the bar too high for Jeff D. There, he's definitely Jeff Dunham net worth, though these are typically.
I'm looking through the Wikipedia at his puppets right now.
The highest earning stand-ups of 2019. Okay,
140 million.
I can't tell if this is going to be an actual. Okay. The highest paid comedians of 2019, starting with 10 going down. Aziz Ansari, 13 million. Jeff Dunham at 9, 15 million. Terry Fator, 17 million. Amy Schumer, Gabriel Iglesias, Sebastian Maniscalco, Trevor Noah, Jim Gaffigan, Jerry Seinfeld. Number one is Kevin Hart.
So maybe that's why they're all under the sea also, because it was all from that same list.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's just pulling from this Forbes list.
Mm-hmm.
Huge gap between 10 at 13 million and number one at 59 million.
Yeah.
Mm.
These puppet descriptions.
Terry Fader.
Hot Pockets.
That was a great bit when it came out. We shit on it now, but I don't remember laughing much harder.
Well, Jim Gaffigan.
The Hot Pockets bit.
Jim Gaffigan is, I think Jim Gaffigan's very funny. And he does a clean routine. It's tough to do that, man.
He just played an Italian dad in Luca. Pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, he does. It is doing a clean routine is, it does feel very impressive.
I can. People, sometimes people like back when I was like active on Twitter, like some people were like, you should try stand up. I'm not meaning like a lot of people. I mean like one or two people said that. So I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but it is a completely irrelevant skill set being able to type out jokes and do stand up.
If you want to know how rich Jeff Dunham is under his hobbies, it's listed like his number one hobby is building helicopters. That's how you know he's fucking rich. We can afford to have a hobby where you're just building aircraft.
He builds an aircraft, but there's a hole where he can put his hand in the aircraft, and it's his most expensive, biggest puppet to date.
Okay, I can make my little chopper talk here. That's funny. He has like the tiniest little co-pilot seat for his puppets.
It looks like his helicopter is cartoonishly designed and looks like a Wallace and Gromit type animated car.
It's claymation. I love that.
Hey, Gromit.
There's got to be a Wallace and Gromit con. What's the Aardman animation? Is that what that is?
The claymation, the British. They did Wallace and Gromit. Then the Farmageddon.
Yeah, what is it? Aardman? Fuck, what's it called? I don't know, man. I'm not an expert on that, unfortunately.
All those designs. I think the Chicken Run was very good. I never really watched Wallace and Gromit. It's off-puttingly British.
I don't like that animation style.
Wallace and Gromit is, Aardman animation. It is arguably one of the five most British things that consistently gets released every year.
Hey, Wallet. Hey, Gromit. It's me, Wallace. Let's go to the moon, Gromit. I'm just doing a bit. It's already been done on another podcast.
Spitting out their smack barn pee wet laughing.
If you know, never mind.
Oh, God.
I want to tweet a Wallace and Gromit picture to put the word like douchebag over his face.
You don't need to be that mean to poor old Wallace.
I wonder what I can find on Wallace and Gromit.
What if Wallace was the guy peeing on things? That was
instead of Calvin?
Yeah. Or he's like, what if we made that? We came out with a line of stickers of Wallace pooping on logos.
No, I think Wallace peeing would be pretty funny because he's got that big, Ninja Turtles mouth smile. Yeah. And he's just turned around smiling. with the tiniest stream you've ever seen peeing on a American animation logo.
And Ken Jack just sent a picture of a very naked Wallace.
He could be more naked.
His face is so funny.
What is that biting from? His lip. What is that from?
It's that thumbnail for a YouTube video, Mothers Beware.
Why does that exist?
Like gameplay. He's like biting his lip too, and he's presenting his big pog ass up in the air. It's so funny.
Oh my God.
Holy shit, that's good.
Hey, I'm gonna have to tweet that out.
I mean, I don't think he would get in trouble either. It's not like he's fully nude. He's just presenting his
He's really biting down on that lip.
Yeah, he's chomping on it. Surprising lack of Wallace and Gromit porn on the airways. You have to step these rookie numbers
on the internet.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's because in British, it's probably a misdemeanor to do like anything besmirching Wallace and Gromit.
Why'd they go to jail?
Oh no!
Posted negative photos of Wallace. Okay. This episode.
Hello, Gromit.
It's so boring. I mean, I like them too, but it doesn't really instill excitement. Do it again. Do it one more time.
Hello, Gromit.
All right.
I'm just ripping off another bit done elsewhere.
All right. Now, Ken Jack, now, come on.
I sent one, but it's big ass honkers.
Just a large breasted Gromit. All right. I have to delete that. I can't look at that ever again. This episode brought to you by Mack Weldon. Oh my God. Mack Weldon has, I actually just bought something from Mack Weldon yesterday. How about that? Mack Weldon has an absolute fantastic set of products. MACKWELDON. Anything from briefs, boxers, trunks, undershirts, Henleys, polos, button ups, sweaters and sweatshirts, jackets, vests. I just bought a t-shirt, actually. I'm wearing a I'm doing a different look for a wedding, a real stupid asshole look. Can't wait to get it. So I had to buy a black t-shirt.
You doing a blazer and a t-shirt?
I'm doing and a gold chain. We're going to do Jake Gyllenhaal, my buddy, are doing what Jake Gyllenhaal and Tom Holland did to the Spider-Man premiere. But they were just impersonating Knight of the Roxbury.
Welcome to the chain gang.
Do a turtleneck.
Bored.
I thought about it, but the wedding's in Austin. It's going to be fucking hot. Hot.
And already wearing all black on black.
The new home of the Buffalo Bills.
I bet we have Bills fans. I'm not gonna do that to them.
It's not gonna happen.
It's not.
If they didn't move two teams to LA, it would still be LA. That was the city for these NFL owners for so long.
What if they just move it to LA? Like four teams in LA. They just keep moving more.
Yeah, no matter how many teams they add there, it's not going to make anyone in LA give a shit about football. They still don't. No, but
they're literally what they're doing is they're like, okay, well, there's two teams in LA. Like, what's the city everybody's talking about now that we don't really know anything about in terms of if it would be able to support a team or not? But okay, there it is. Yeah, I guess we'll move the team there. And then you're just like, shut the fuck up.
Where the fuck would they even play? Maybe they'd
Where's the Austin FC stadium going to be?
Austin FC, they already have it. I mean, they already play there. It's wedged right in the middle of a massive development. And they're already building more stuff. I mean, there's a lot of room in Austin, but where I think you could put it, I don't know. Maybe they'd put it by the F1 track. It's not going to happen.
I think Chicago needs a second football team. Hear me out on this.
San Antonio should get a pro football team. Austin, I don't think should get a pro football team.
I think you're right, Trill. Especially because I feel like the changeover of Bills fans to like second Chicago fans would be like not that bad. I feel like their fan bases aren't crazy dissimilar.
No, I just think Chicago needs a team out in the suburbs, just right in the
Naperville Bills,
but it'd be in Naperville. Yeah.
That team would have two fans. That team would have no fans.
That would be miserable.
Oh, hold on. We're doing an ad read. Mac Weldon. Ultimate Lazy Sunday. They have their Ace sweatshirts, modern tailoring for weekend travels too. They have polos, shorts. All their stuff is great. Their bags are great. Their card holders are fantastic too. So Mac Weldon, 20% off your first order. MACKWELDON.com/lights and enter promo code lights. MacWeldon.com/lights, promo code lights for 20% off. Look, if I'm buying it to wear it to a wedding, you know it's good quality shit. You know, nobody's wearing like bad stuff to a wedding. So that's your little hint that Mack Walton's got great stuff. Not a ton of movie news. Off the top, though, we do have Ridley Scott's House of Gucci trailer starring Lady Gaga and Adam Driver. Also, Jared Leto, Selma Hayek, Jeremy Irons, Al Pacino. Spanning three decades of love, betrayal, decadence, revenge, and ultimately murder, we see what a name means, what it's worth, and how far a family will go for control. Releases in theaters on November 24th. And like they said, Ridley Scott, what was Ridley Scott's last movie?
Martian? No.
Was it? I mean, it might have been.
We were doing,
been doing shows
Ridley Scott
and stuff.
Talk last podcast.
We literally just talked Ridley Scott. Alien Covenant.
Oh yeah.
Oh, All the Money in the World. Very forgotten about.
I remember
that
one.
I didn't even think about it. Oh, do you?
Really?
Yeah, but he did the show that was pretty good. Raised by Wolves on HBO Max, which is a kind of like a weird proto Aliens kind of show, but it's really good. I like that show.
Remember C?
Yeah.
Yes.
On Apple TV Plus. Well, you know they announced the next season, I guess.
Yeah, I thought they already did, right?
Yeah, but I guess I don't know. I actually didn't know. I think we're they added Dave Bautista to it. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, Dave Bautista, I think, is in the season that was already like teased, right? So I thought they announced a third season, and the second one is the one that has Bautista.
Ito Voss, season two.
I have no problem putting Dave Bautista in more stuff.
Agreed.
I mean, that makes me want to watch C a little bit more.
I saw him post something recently where, like, he had deflected a question saying, like, yeah, like, do we want to your career path modeling more The Rock or John Cena? And he's just like, no, like I kind of just don't, you know, I want to do my own thing and I don't want to be compared to them really in that same space. It's like, I get it, but I'm like my own kind of person and I'm not trying to be what they are. Which I think is cool.
Are we talking about House of Gucci?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the trailer looked cool, but I can't quantify this and don't ask me to explain it, but I think this has the potential to be a bad movie.
It's the accents. I think that's how you quantify it. The accents like
it looks cool and like, you know, kind of sexy in 1995, but like at the same time, it's like, First off, it's got Jared Leto doing a bit, which is like,
once you see what he looks like, give me a fucking break, guy. Like, what are we doing?
But I mean, like, it wouldn't shock me if it went either way. I wouldn't be shocked. Like, I don't think this is going to be like the movie of the year, but I think like best case, it's a pretty solid flick and people like it. But I think worst case, I think there's a really low floor for this movie. I think it could be really bad. I'm not saying it's going to be, but it just like, it wouldn't shock me if you got into it and it was just kind of like a disconnected mess of a movie.
Mm-hmm. Jared Leto playing George Bluth.
It was a very odd hair and makeup choice. It's like, just get someone else. Get someone else to play him. I have like fucking Stephen Root as him, actually really funny, but I don't know, do something else. And again, the accent work was just the weirder thing, I think, while I was watching that. And it's weird because like Lady Gaga, I believe, was like raised in Italy or something, or spoke Italian growing up and all that. So I don't know. Bizarre. But she's really good. And her playing a femme fatale or whatever, I think is pretty badass.
Yeah, I mean, obviously based on a true story.
Yes.
The murder, the contract hit murder of Mauricio Gucci. I
know the actual Patrizia Reggiani, she like is pissed off because Lady Gaga didn't like come visit her in Italian prison to like get her blessing or whatever to how to play her.
I don't know, man. I hope it's good. I'm not saying it's going to be bad, but it has those vibes to where if you get outside the trailer and now you got to watch this for 2 hours and they got to stretch this whole thing out for 2 hours.
Mm.
Who knows? And actually, like, you know, Jared Leto and Al Pacino is a pretty potent combination.
Not one we thought we saw coming.
Leto fucking lives to have stories written about him where the headline says Jared Leto unrecognizable in new role.
It's like the clickbait thing or the clickhole thing. Like, Jared Leto did what?
Yeah,
he loves that headline.
It's insane.
What'd you think of the Heart of Glass, a stylized version that they used for it?
I liked it. I mean, it fit the vibe of the movie. You know, they stylized it. It was glamorous. It's kind of a glamorous song to begin with. Just the sound of it, and I had no problem with that. I thought that was nice. Like, and that cut into the pictures of like, what was that silver car? Was that the McLaren?
Like, I don't know. Cool though.
Was that a Lamborghini? Was that I don't know. It was a neat looking car. Like, obviously the highlighting the lifestyle was pretty important to the movie. But like, you wonder once you get past that, now you're starting to sit there and it's like, now you have scenes where Lady Gaga is trying to hire a contract killer. Mm-hmm. Is that compelling cinema? We'll find out.
Mm-hmm. Sure will. You know that song came out in 1978, Art of Glass? I would assume that was like smack in the middle of the 80s.
No, I mean, that was the weird thing about the trailer where like I think it's
95.
I don't know like how, I don't know if the movie is going to be set over multiple years or whatever. It just picks up right then, but it's certainly not like, you're not going to put like Pearl Jam Better Man in there. Like, it's not going to fit in the vibe of the movie. So whatever.
Agreed. That's, I think it fit.
The Ridley Scott movie. Not a ton of other news. There's a pretty big lawsuit. Scarlett Johansson filed a lawsuit against Disney due to Black Widow going on Disney Plus. It's a contract breach. Her salary was dictated by box office return. That's a pretty fucking wild ending to that relationship, I imagine. I don't know enough about that to say much more, but I can only imagine how fucking messy that's going to be. And that also probably sets a precedent for towing the line on these things, or more people may come out and do that, because there's a lot of other movies that probably made some money. So that's kind of a wild story.
You see if they do it for Dune or even Suicide Squad, guys. It'd be fascinating to see. They have less to lose, too, the people in Suicide Squad. Like, how many of them do you think we're on, like, come back and play like David Delmastigan wants to come play like the fucking polka dot man or whatever, you know? Well, so I don't know.
I think it's like, yeah, I mean, it's especially relevant to something like this where it's a Marvel movie that is like anchored by, and you know, it's Scarlett Johansson's movie, right? And we talked about it a little bit where I don't think there's been any major move to express a lot of dissatisfaction. Like I know some directors, what was the movie we talked about? One director was particular, I think it was Luca, right? Where there may have been some unhappiness with the move to streaming. And we kind of understood that because it's like, this is your debut or your first full length feature. You want to see it come out. But I mean, if your contract is, you know, based off of being compensated by like whatever they call it, where you get to a certain point of box office and residual, you get a percentage of that. But yeah, I certainly would understand the need to feel like you were being undercompensated per your contract. But then I just default to I'm an idiot, so I don't understand contracts and that shit. So
yeah, and they had like their first duties as shareholders, right? So like for Disney anyway. So I feel like it makes sense, but also it does suck for Scarlett.
Again, I don't know enough about like the fine details, but yeah. My view is just kind of. I mean, if that was the contract, like, yeah, I get why I get why she's suing like that. Yeah, like I get it.
Disney's going to and Disney's going to fight this because I think this is the precedent.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. And I think there is some, you know, there's some noise that Emma Stone might do something similar
for Cruella. Yeah.
So yeah, that's going to, I mean, that's actually going to be really fascinating to watch because. It would be very intimidating to legally go against Walt Disney Company.
Yes. It actually, the movie still had the best opening weekend of any movie since COVID started, which is crazy. Like $80 million or something opening weekend. Yeah. So it's not exactly like it under or crazy downplayed the performance or something, but or affected the performance, but still.
Yeah. Again, I don't really know like where it's going to head, who's in the right or wrong, but
The Jedi are evil.
Yeah.
So the Jedi is Disney here. So
it just feels like, I don't know. It feels like ScarJo has a point here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I don't know. We'll see the details on the case, but like, I think the big thing is like going against the company that has been rumored to send C&Ds to daycares for putting murals of Peter Pan on their wall. So, they're going to fight tooth and nail, and it is definitely going to get messy.
Oh, absolutely. And she could be in the wrong, but I mean, I'm just only really saying how I get it. Messy. And this is not the last one either, obviously. I'm sure there'll be a domino from this. J.K. Simmons returning to play Commissioner Jim Gordon in the upcoming Batgirl movie, which is cool.
Yeah.
Love that. He got ripped for that, so why not? I think that was when he got ripped for. Taika Waititi is going to write a live-action Flash Gordon movie, which I fucking love. That is awesome. I don't know where he has the time.
He does like 15 projects on his docket at any given moment. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know where he has the time, but this just seems like something that he absolutely will crush.
He has that new show that's dropping on Hulu soon, the Reservation Dogs one, which I'm hoping is going to be awesome. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like with Flash Gordon, like I don't know enough about him as a character. Like it wasn't like a big part of me, my child growing up, but like, I feel like I grew more attached to, or more like interested in him over time. So it'd be cool to see a revival. My biggest exposure was Ted.
Right. That's the most relevant recent pop culture thing with Flash Gordon is Ted. And then Tom Hanks cast in Wes Anderson's new movie, which that makes sense because Tom Hanks feels like he like really has a great
built for that.
Oh. Yeah. Like a great positive voice vibe. And yeah, it makes sense.
Just extremely pleasant human being. And just seeing him, I think just on screen doing anything with Wes Anderson, I would love it if whatever the movie is, and actually, I don't know. Is it, it's live action, right? I'm assuming.
Is it announced?
I don't even know, but if it was animated, I think it would be even better because I do think he just has one of the most like amazing, comforting voices that any actor has. And just him doing that with like a Wes Anderson shot of like, I don't know, some square frame meal cooking. Oh, love that. Love that for our boy, Tommy Hanks.
Tommy Hanks
is just very funny, actually.
We are getting the French Dispatch soon from Wes Anderson. Do you think how many hard boiled eggs? Do you think Wes Anderson eats every day?
No, he does. What's the one? Deviled eggs? No, not deviled eggs. What's the one where you like soft boil it?
Soft boiled it
with a spoon. Yeah, that's the
and
one.
He has a little like. They have the holders, right?
Yeah,
the little holders. Exactly.
It's like a little candle holder looking thing.
What are the birds from Succession and also real life? But I'm an idiot from Succession that you like put a napkin over your face to cover the shame of eating them.
Yeah, it's like the Le Fon Sousson or something like that. I know what you're
talking about. Nailed it. That exactly. Yeah. You just made a bunch of French sounding
words. you say Le Fon Sousson?
The Life Aquatic with Le Fon Sousson. You have to put like a handkerchief over your head when you eat it. And it's like
it's so funny. That fucking show. I cannot wait. I cannot fucking wait.
I forgot where I first saw it. I think I saw it on like American Dad or something. Right.
I'm just gonna Google the bird egg.
Bird egg shame.
Ortolan.
Ortolan, yeah.
Yeah, Ortolan. That's it.
I was close.
And then lastly, a new show coming to NBC called, is it La Brea?
La Brea. like the La Brea tar pits.
An epic adventure begins when a massive sinkhole opens up in the middle of Los Angeles, pulling hundreds of people and buildings into its depths. Those who fell in find themselves in a mysterious and dangerous primeval land where they have no choice but to band together. The show follows one family broken up by the events trying to get back together. Looks really bad.
This is a very 90s concept.
Yes.
Yes, extremely. I could see like Pierce Brosnan and I'm going to say Helen Hunt. I don't know why I'm saying those. I'm just combining the cast of Twister and what do you call it? What was the volcano movie that Pierce Brosnan did?
Dante's Peak.
Just combining those two. I could see both of them being in this movie or show, whatever.
Back in the 90s, you mean? Like if they would have been done like in the 90s, like the earth cracks open and then a bunch of families transported to a dinosaur realm there where they learn to love each other again.
Journey to the center of the earth type of thing.
But the dinosaurs are the dinosaur suits from the TV show Dinosaurs.
Yep.
Have you been to the tar pits drill?
I have not. Have you?
So my thing was, I didn't know if like the way the title is capitalized and it's in LA. I didn't know if it was like LA and they were doing like a weird twist.
Like my favorite movie, Battle Law.
Oh my God. Los Angeles. Jesus Christ.
This
looks bad. This looks like a bad show. And then actually one more thing. I had never heard this song. Ken Jack, maybe you have. The song Cut the Mozzarella. Do you know this
song? Cut the Mozzarella. Not off the top of my head.
I mean, I don't know. What is it? I guess we can't play it.
I mean, I'm going to play it.
Okay. I have to
play this song. Okay. I heard it.
Roll the dice.
And I just can't believe it. One second. I'm going to share it. We're going to listen to it. Because there's a couple parts in this song that are just... They're unbelievable. It's a very Long Island song.
Oh, great. Let's do it. Oh, thank God. Music video is coming soon.
Featuring the lactose Italian.
Italian. He spelled it wrong.
All right, come on. Get to the fucking chorus here.
You need to get to the drop. There you go.
Tony, how it goes, man? I see you got a nice little sub over there. Yeah, not too bad. I went out of a long waiter for like a fucking hour. And I got picked up this decent sub. What do you got in that sub, Tony? They didn't have any mozzarella, but I got the gabagol. I got the mortadella. I got all the Italian shit, but no mozzarella. Tony. I wouldn't even wait in line if they had no mozzarella. See, but the whole... No, you don't fucking get it. Luckily for me, I carry around a spare fucking mozzarella everywhere I go. And watch the way I...
Cut the mozzarella.
Cut the
mozzarella. I just can't believe it.
Cut the motherfucking mozzarella. Cut the mozzarella.
That's so funny. Oh, my God.
Why do you think I'm...
generation Italian music right there, baby.
What were you saying, Astro? Cut the mozzarella.
Where would I have heard this song?
I don't know, because you find weird. Come on, you come across weird stuff. It's like the
okay. I kind of like this.
The ending is unbelievable.
Let me take a guess and guess that you heard this in Jersey Shore over the weekend at a bar and everyone fucking blitzed it.
Everybody fucking lost it. This is the ending is incredible.
If you're Italian and you hate your mother-in-law, fucking scream!
That actually kind of rules.
That is incredible.
That.
If you're Italian and you hate your mother-in-law, fucking scream. Oh my God.
Wow. So that's hot as a shore.
Yeah, I'd never heard that song. It's 6 years old.
That's funny.
Wow. Okay. Moving on. Ad read time. 3Chi is a sponsor of today's episode. 3Chi, fantastic products. 3Chi.com, the number 3Chi.com. Get Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, oils. Can be used to make edibles. Also, buy their edibles are great.
So good.
They're fantastic. Not CBD. Cannot stress that enough. It's a psychoactive, give you a buzz. So use it responsibly. 3Chi.com, number 3Chi.com. Shop for Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, and oils. Or get their edibles. They're the industry leader in Delta 8 THC products. Federally legal version of THC. It's fantastic, great buzz, all that stuff, less anxiety, paranoia. Use code CAMERA, C-A-M-E-R-A, at checkout to receive 5% off your order. Use code CAMERA, 3Chi. It was mid-burp there when I said that. It's fantastic. Use code CAMERA. Jungle Cruise. Another movie in the Disney theme park rides universe. This joins Pirates of the Caribbean 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Both big captain franchises.
Tomorrowland, which is a movie George Clooney did with Brad Bird. Brad Bird decided to not
do The Force Awakens.
Based on
a whole part of the park. Dinosaur, which is like a cross. I think it was either based on or the inspiration for the dinosaur ride at Disney World and Animal Kingdom. The Haunted Mansion with Eddie Murphy, bad movie. Yeah, and then the Country Bears live action based on the Country Bear Jamboree, one of the most cursed things to ever hit the internet or hit theaters, excuse me. And Haley Joel Osteen was the lead voice in that one.
Who voiced Casper? This is off topic, but is that also Haley Joel?
Casper, like the 96 Casper? No, that was before Haley Joel.
Before Haley Joel.
Who was it? With Christina Ricci.
Yeah.
No,
people don't talk about Casper enough. That was a pretty friendly ghost.
Wasn't that
it wasn't. Malachi Pearson, the voice of Casper.
Okay.
But yeah, look, as you just said, Christina Ricci was in it. That's why I thought that. She did not voice Casper. As for the friendly ghost, now that's a character that has just...
I voiced Casper.
Casper, what an iconic 90s character that has just absolutely no fucking... Not even a sliver of relevance right now.
Not a drip of relevancy.
Not even like a bone dry amount of relevance.
Mm-hmm. And like I feel like most people our age, we know Casper.
Yeah.
But like that's the first time I've said Casper out loud in like 20 years.
Absolutely unrelated, but I came across a video today of Joel McHale talking about Chevy Chase today.
Oh,
always entertaining.
Yes. Like
an absolute, and I don't mean this in a negative way on our former guest, Joel McHale, an absolute beating around the bush always of him just basically wanting to probably say, fuck that guy.
I feel like everyone is like pretty open about how much they hate Chevy Chase. Like, even me before pre-old, like.
He wasn't great to work with, according to
like everyone,
a pretty good number of people.
Joel McHale is absurdly professional when he talks about it, and I commend him for it. That's what I'll say.
True, fair enough.
Jungle Cruise. It's out in theaters and on Disney Plus Premier Access. Dr. Lily, and what was this? Oh, sorry. I'm like looking at a literal fucking wrong thing. Enlist the aid of wisecracking Skipper to take her down the Amazon in his ramshackle boat. Together, they search for an ancient tree that holds the power to heal, a discovery that will change the future of medicine. Very MacGuffin-y. Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, Emily Blunt, Edgar Ramirez, Jack Whitehall, Jesse Plemons in a Jesse Plemons role, Paul Giamatti.
They stopped short of just letting him play a Nazi, which I think is bullshit. Just let him be a Nazi. I know it's Disney, but come on.
Yeah, yeah. He's pretty damn close to just being a Nazi. 93% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which, by the way, The Rock did his post today about the audience score. The Rock loves the audience score, and I love that The Rock uses the audience score because that's just how smart The Rock is. 63% approval rating from the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. I would say it's higher up there for these theme park movies, but not particularly great in that sense. Ken Jack, I'll let you go first. You watched it first. I'll tee it up for you. I think you were a little more surprised that it wasn't terrible.
Yeah, for sure. I think the way to break it down is, like, I think the first two acts of this movie are pretty fucking good. As far as, like, actually, I'll even narrow it down to just say the first act was very surprising and very good. I think they set up, like, this sort of cool world or whatever. I think that the character that The Rock, I think all the characters in here are interesting. I think they're funny. A lot of the lines, especially, like, when they're setting up the characterization for The Rock, when, like, he just keeps ripping off the one-liners and the little girl's like, "Mommy, please make him stop." Like, I, like, laughed out loud during that scene. Like, there's a couple moments in that made me laugh out loud way more than I expected.
So that actually is, that's like an homage to the actual Jungle Cruise, because that's the whole thing about that cruise is, like, they have, like, a script on the cruise where they make a lot of stupid jokes. And the big joke from that cruise, just because I watched a documentary about the actual Jungle Cruise itself, is it the backside of water joke. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as someone who watched that documentary about the actual Jungle Cruise and then 15 minutes later watched Jungle Cruise, I'm glad they tipped their hat to that.
Yeah, I see. I didn't even know that at all because I've not been to a Disney person right here. So, but I thought that was funny. I thought that the actual character of Skippy Wolf was interesting, like I was saying before. The Emily Blunt character I thought was pretty badass. I think they weaved the entire first act into turning this into, like, it felt almost like very Indiana Jonesy with, like, the very sweeping score, which, by the way, the score was awesome. It was like a very good John Williams impression, I would say. James Newton Howard did that.
Did you recognize the song they used for, like, the main motif of the movie?
No.
It was an instrumental of Nothing Else Matters by Metallica.
Would not have picked up on that at all. Wow, that's crazy.
Like, I'm pretty sure it sounded just like it.
But yeah,
oh, yeah. It was revealed Metallica collaborated with Howard on the instrumental version of Nothing Else Matters. Sorry.
It felt to me, I think, the whole movie like a poor man's version of Indiana Jones and, like, maybe a little bit more of a teen-built version of it. I think it was, like, the pieces I take away from it is that I think that once they got into the weeds of, like, the actual shit with the conquistadors and, like, the arrow and, like, they started, like, bringing in, like, the crazy CGI machinations and all that, it really kind of lost me there. Especially towards the second, that third act, which felt very drawn out. It didn't feel very, I would say, satisfying in that end. But that first act I thought was very cool. Again, I think they were on the right track, just kind of lost their footing a little bit. And I think that they could have maybe leaned a bit less on the CGI, done all practical stuff. Cause, like, you can go out into, like, and make something, if they're very clear that they, like, trying to make this Indiana Jones impression, go out and do it with more practical, right? Like, you're even doing the Tree of Life, which is almost the same exact bullshit as the fucking Holy Grail in The Last Crusade. Like, just, I'd rather them have gone all out than have this whole, I think, you know, like, some of these movies that have come out over the last 10 years have that CGI sheen to them, like the entire movie has it, and this had that, and that immediately is a turnoff for me. But other than that, I think very enjoyable. I'm sure families are probably loving this, because this is like, it strikes a wide net as far as being able to appeal to, like, full-grown adults, and also kids, teens. I think it has a little bit of everything for everyone, so I think that part of it is very impressive as well.
So what was your final score on that? Just to remind, I just want to make sure I write it down here.
Final score is 67.
67 out of 100, which is higher than I think.
Way higher than I expected I would have graded it.
Yeah, I'm a little lower than that. I have it at a 58 out of 100. I didn't love it, but it is, I thought it was going to be awful, like awful, 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 awful. It's entertaining in a lot of spots. It just, and this is not an original take, so please do not think that this is me making this up, because I've heard this now from multiple people reviewing it or people that I know that have seen it. It really feels like a
pirate.
Worst version of like an attempt to try to make The Mummy again, right? Like that. I know people are saying Indiana Jones too, but it has a very like, can we make The Mummy?
Yeah,
albeit a little more like that's the best way to describe it for me. Like that's exactly what it felt like. It felt like
it was The Mummy age range strike. Like I was saying before, like that was definitely the group they were appealing for.
Yeah, exactly. It just feels like that's the attempt, and it fails in a bunch of spots. That The Mummy, well, The Mummy is not a fucking classic, right? Like it fails in some spots. The Mummy succeeds decently well.
Yeah. See, I thought it reminded me so much of Pirates in the second half. Just the general vibe of like the CGI, well, you kind of like the CGI skeletons and pirates and then the characters in this one. And it makes sense because it's in the Ride cinematic universe. And also like Pirates is like a pretty generic like adventure story. What separates Pirates from being into like the good category is the Jack Sparrow character. Without like Jack Sparrow, that entire franchise would not work. And that's what I think this movie really lacked. I liked Dwayne Johnson and I really liked Emily Blunt, but I really thought it lacked just like an overly enthralling like character.
Yeah.
That would just like Jack Sparrow, like that was the draw for the original Pirates. And I'm not like, this isn't a hot take or anything like that. It just is what it is. And without that, it's, you know, it's an adventure movie. It's a solid adventure movie. I gave it a 65, very solid movie, but and I'm with you guys. I thought this was going to be way worse than it ended up being. And there were parts that I really liked. And I agree with the CGI in the second part, the first part of the movie though, like I really like those overhead shots of the river, especially in that chase where you first see Jesse Plemons in his submarine. Where like that actually felt like they were filmed. Like it actually felt like you were at like one of those Disney rides where like the pre-scripted on rails action is happening. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it is like a little ridiculous that they blast through a warehouse in order to avoid a torpedo. Mm-hmm. But why not? Why not take it there? So like I just didn't have like anything huge to like complain about in the movie other than the fact that like I do feel like once you got into the second act and then the big twist is revealed, it was good, but it reminded me a lot about Pirates without like the thing that made Pirates really great.
It's lacking a magic. Like there's, and actually someone on our Reddit had the comment, he said this movie is like Curse of the Black Pearl and Not Treasure without the magic. Like it doesn't have that magic, and I think it is the character. The Rock is fine in it. Emily Blunt is like really solid in it as well. I enjoy to see Plemons doing stuff, but there's just not a thing. You're right.
There's no weirdo.
The charisma of the character. Like I don't know what exactly it is. And that's been my issue with this movie since I watched. Like I can't pinpoint exactly where it fails. And that's why I'm kind of just copping out and saying it's the broad. It's kind of just a little bit of everything.
Well, you know, and I think The Rock, look, the Rock is one of the most charismatic actors or actresses working right now. I don't think that again, not another hot take, but his character wasn't like,
there's two straight characters. You know what I mean? Like you can't have two straight men. You need like Orlando Bloom was like the straight guy there. And then like, basically Jack Sparrow was like the weirdo. You need like something to play off of there. And like, they didn't have that.
You know what this movie really fucking needed? You know who it needed?
No, don't say it.
No. This movie needed Josh Gad.
No, okay. I thought you were going to say something with someone else.
This movie needed Josh Gad.
As what?
As like the third person, like the fourth person on the boat to be like the comic relief character, to be the charisma magnet.
Mm-hmm. I think they needed someone more weird because they were too. I think The Rock and Emily Blunt were both very normal, and like they needed something to play off of, and there wasn't really that there. They both had like comic like moments of levity, but moments of drama.
I just got
also
word.
The Rock with the hair. I hate it.
I just got word that was the biggest upset in the history of this podcast. the live odds on you saying Skylar Gismondo was at minus 5,000, and you said Josh Gad instead. Unbelievable. Yeah, crazy. No, actually, that's a fantastic point. Like, you're right, and maybe, yeah, but I agree maybe with you, but I'll devil's advocate it. That man just overstuffed what already felt like a fairly overstuffed movie.
Well, you needed to take the energy coming from the Paul Giamatti character and transfer it to somebody on the
boat. Yes, agreed.
And play off them. Because like Paul Giamatti had fantastic energy, but the problem is he wasn't in it as, and I agree, like the Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt characters are both smart. And it's just like you almost need someone who's a total dumbass.
Exactly, yeah. I saw this quote.
And even the Jack Whitehall character was smart. But you needed the Josh Gad dumbass character on that boat.
Like, also, he was klutzy, the Jack Whitehall one, but he wasn't like you're saying, he wasn't like a dumbass. You needed
He wasn't a dumbass.
One.
He was you needed like, hey guys, do you mind if I eat this fire?
Exactly.
No, Josh Gad's character, don't do that, dumbass.
Also, it lacked a moment, right? Like, I think it lacked a moment where even in the Pirates live action movies following Curse of the Black Pearl, it never had that, like, there was never like a tension and a build up to the moment where Jack steps into the light and he's dead or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, this, and then the subsequent Pirates never really had something like that, right? Like, they never had, like, twist. I know at the end, like, Jeffrey Rush character, like, walked down the stairs. What's his face? Old fucking pirate face.
But he wasn't the main character.
Barbossa. Yeah, exactly. Barbossa. Yeah, there was never, like, they never had that magic again. And this one doesn't have that either. Like I think everything's just, like, more than fine. It's nowhere near terrible. Like, I enjoyed watching it. Like, it was a fun watch. I thought this movie was going to be dog shit. But, man, you like, this is where these types of movies actually bum me out, because you go a little something here and there. This could have been much closer to Pirates or National Treasure for that. I mean, National Treasure has a lot of those moments. Like, it could have been closer to that. But you're right. There was no matter how fucking charismatic The Rock is, just something was missing. Just something. Something wasn't Jack Sparrow. Something wasn't William Gates. Something wasn't Benjamin Gates. Why did I say William Gates?
Yeah, Ben Gates III or something.
Bill Gates. You want Bill Gates on the
board? Yeah. And then something, and there wasn't a Rick O'Connell. Like, there wasn't, there just didn't have that magic with the Rock character. And whether that's writing, and it has nothing to do with the jokes, like Cheryl said, like, that's the charm of it. Like, you're still making the movie based on the ride. Like, you have to have the charm of, like, the dad jokes and the corny dialogue. But, like, just, man, it was just, something was, what a win for Vin Diesel. That's what I'm saying.
The Rock definitely has a no dumbass clause in all of his contracts. Like, he can't be that guy anymore.
Well, he kind of did that in the Kevin Hart movie he did. Remember?
But he wasn't even, like, dumb in that movie. He was still really cool.
Yeah. Like, but that's what I'm saying, kind of. He didn't, like, go full, like, you know, his character was still The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
That's his brand. I get it. I just think that I really like the chemistry between Mr. Johnson and Mrs. Blunt, Miss Blunt here.
Mr. Johnson.
But Mr. Rock.
I think the crew could have been larger. I think they actually could have replaced the leopard or the cheetah or whatever. What was that?
That was dumb.
They could have just
Proximo or whatever.
Yeah, like Proximo, I guess Proximo was fine because it was like an animal companion and it's a Disney movie and you kind of need that. But it was one of the more ridiculous scenes in the movie where the I guess, like, it makes sense that they're in cahoots, but when I first saw, like, him basically just do, like, a Boston crab on a leopard in the bar or whatever.
Yeah.
It was like, come on. Like, or just, like, push it off. But I think you just kind of had, like, one more person on that boat, or just got, like, maybe changed the Jack Whitehall character a little bit to, I don't know, like, be... I think there needed to be more of a contrast between Johnson and Blunt's combined competency.
Yes, agreed. I saw a clip of, like, a Men's Health article Paul Giamatti was part of, and he said, like, they asked him, like, to come in and just do something with the character, and he said, I originally wanted to have a monkey that lit my cigars, but it's a Disney movie, so I couldn't smoke, and then getting a monkey was also very difficult.
Yeah,
He needed a smoking monk, a cigar and a lighter smoke or a lighter monkey for sure.
The twist. What did you think about the twist? Was it a twist to you guys at that
but
point?
But like, even you remember when you were saying before the like the scene where Jack Sparrow comes out and reveals that he's like a fucking dead or whatever. Like that's cool. Like the reveal of the Rock being a fucking conquistador was very lame. I thought like he was just alive with the fucking stake in his heart, and it was just like, oh yeah, I'm a conquistador by the way. Like it wasn't that moment. That should have been a moment.
That was one of the better comedic scenes in the movie because it was pretty heavy handed with the you know, kind of the only jokes adults would get or the parents would get.
Mm-hmm.
But also, was it the right place for it? Because it kind of like it didn't make it like this big dramatic reveal. I mean, I guess that's what they were going for.
Yeah,
it surprised me, but then I got to it. I'm like, okay, like I guess that makes sense.
That's just kind of my reaction.
Yeah, well, and also the Jesse Plemons character was just a bad, stupid. It wasn't a Barbossa. Let me just put it.
Nah, you're right. It just there again, and it's man. Do you bring that? It's like it was kind of in every spot. It just lacked. It just missed something, and I think it had nothing to do with like the idea that they're adapting this on the ride. Like I know that's the kind of thing that always comes up. It's like, oh, it's the thing on the ride, thing based on a ride. I don't think it had anything to do with it. I think it was just a pretty below average adventure movie. Like that's just it's simple. Like you don't need to really chalk up anything more than that. I think, yeah, kids may like it, and it's obviously like what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to come out a long time ago, by the way.
Yeah.
Long, long time ago. Tom Hanks, Tim Allen are gonna be in it. That's just Toy Story. Yeah.
Imagine Tim Allen in this.
Tim Allen wrestling a leopard in the middle of a bar.
It's just it misses that magic, which is a bummer because I do think The Rock is I know The Rock is capable of that. He's capable of a Rick O'Connell, right? But mm-hmm. it's just, and I don't know, maybe it's something with The Rock where The Rock has to be in a role that. Or the script or the dialogue has to be like very rocky to you make it work.
Why did you smell what the Amazon's cooking, brother?
I know
it's defaulting well, into Hulk Hogan, but
the problem, like with
like what? Really,
it's not really a problem because this is what people like about The Rock, but he or Dwayne Johnson, he is one of those actors that it's like. You can't escape from you. He's not a character actor, right? Like he doesn't blend into a role the same way that like, you know, a J.K. Simmons might. But you're paying Dwayne Johnson to be Dwayne Johnson. So that's not the point. So I like it, but at the same time, if you're paying Dwayne Johnson to be Dwayne Johnson, like you want what you're paying him for, which is the Dwayne Johnson brand comedy, comedic timing, which I find him very funny. Like, all the action hero stuff and whatnot. And, you know, he's diverged from that. He's been in a few things where he swerved it a little here and there, but for the most part, like he knows what he's doing. So I don't know. Like I don't want him to really, like, I don't think he should necessarily do something different because this is why you get Dwayne Johnson to be in a role. And he puts the butts into the seats.
He's a big presence guy.
I don't know how you make it.
But presence, you know,
yes, he loves giving out gifts.
He might be. I don't actually honestly don't know him well enough to say.
He
just,
every time he shows up on set, he's got a new gift. He's and I don't know how to fix it. So this is a classic reviewer thing. I'm going to criticize something and have no idea how they could have done something better. But it feels like I think I've landed on it. It feels like they're in a bit of a lane. Like he was kind of put into a track with this, where I think in order to have like a better character. And a character that really pops, like a Rick O'Connell, a Gates, a Sparrow. I want to feel like that character is owning that actor or actress is owning the character rather than they're just reading lines that fit that role, sort of, right? Like it never felt like he really got to make it his own and do his thing. And I'm looking at past, like, what are some for The Rock movies? Hobbs and Shaw,
Skyscraper,
Jumanji, and Shaw. Like even Jumanji. You know, Jumanji's Scorpion different because his King. Character was weird. Scorpion. But like he, even in Jumanji, like it felt like he was really able to make that character his own. And this character fit The Rock, but this felt like it was written for The Rock and The Rock showed up and did his lines. But where this movie could have been better had The Rock been able to really do something a little different.
This movie needed to was just they needed better bad guys. I think if you got rid of the conquistadors and you got rid of the Jesse Plemons proto-Nazi character, like it needed one good bad guy and like a henchman, and then they have like their or like a second in command and then henchman. There's too many different bad guys there, and none of them were very compelling.
It just should have been Paul Giamatti all the way through.
Yeah.
Like at least replacing the Jesse Plemons character. Like he should have wanted to vie for what he was trying to find, the tree of life. Like he should have gotten into that. Like that's the classic, like
turning into like a rat race. Yeah.
I don't think it necessarily needed the Jesse Plemons character, other than like that provided like guns and more like technical stuff to do in the movie. But yeah, Jeff, to like your point, it's like you pay for The Rock and then you want him to be The Rock because that's what people like. So like, how do you deviate from that? That's the tough call. Like, what do you even make them do? Like, cause I did like his character was like when he got into, you know, his story and after the plot twist, like in the flashback and having Nothing Else Matters playing, like I did think that like was a pretty cool scene where, you know, I thought he acted it very well, but that was just a small snippet of the movie.
Again, The Rock with hair, though, very cursed. Don't do that anymore, Hollywood. I feel like Hercules has been the sign that we were no longer doing that. The Rock's a bald man or shaved head man, and I think we could move forward just only doing those roles. No wigs.
No, he's a bald man.
He might shave the sides of his head still, dude. I don't know.
Well, he definitely shaves his head, but it's because he's bald.
Well, yeah, but it's both, I guess. Shaved head and bald and also bald.
Yeah, I'm just trying to say, like, you know, I look like The Rock.
Yeah, that's the moral of the story.
That's the vibe I go for.
For those of you listening, he's actually drinking a Zoa Energy right now.
I got my Terramana camera. Terramana Sundays. That's the day we know and love.
Pouring out over ice.
Somebody said that to me this past weekend. They're like, have you heard or tried The Rock's tequila? And I said, oh, have I?
So got it at the Monomobile.
It's not the month.
Monomobile.
Yeah. 50s, 60s, 65 for Trail, 67 for Ken Jack, 58 for myself. I don't know. Watch it with your kids. It's perfectly fine. I'll never run this movie back ever again.
I think the frustrating thing is I feel like the more I'm thinking about this movie, that the pieces were there for something to be very good, and it just didn't execute it the way that they could have, and that's kind of a bummer. It could have been a franchise, is what I'm saying.
I don't want to paper over Emily Blunt in this movie either. Like she was very, very good in this.
Yeah, Emily Blunt.
We talked about but I feel like that's kind of just unfortunately what we expect from Emily Blunt, what she consistently delivers on. So there's not much to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Emily Blunt is as much of a pro's pro as I think there might be in Hollywood. Like Emily Blunt does not turn in bad performances.
Even if the movies are substandard, she's always extremely good.
Emily Blunt is always arguably the best part of a movie, if not close, and never bad. Wild Mountain Time.
Okay, yeah, not her fault though. She was the best part of that movie.
All right,
she was in Looper.
I was wrong.
Yeah, she was the she ran the farm.
I know. I'm just saying.
Into the Looper. Woods, she was fantastic. Not a great movie. I didn't hate it. I'm a sucker for that garbage.
Best part of Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, I mean, Edge of Tomorrow is fucking
the what was her nickname? The Angel. Verdun.
Verdun. I don't know. She was just her in that big ass mech suit and it looked cool as hell.
Mechs are awesome.
What a surprise movie that was.
Mm-hmm. Out of nowhere, just amazing.
That's one of those movies. I love finding a good movie where you tell people to watch and they're like, really?
Yeah.
Like, I
never heard of this. And then it's like, I come back later and I'm like, holy shit.
That was awesome. Yeah, Edge of Tomorrow is that. Next movie we're going to review is going to be Green Knight.
Green Knight. Is
fucking awesome.
Is it Dev Patel? Who else? Try three.
Awesome movie. And I was told, and I don't now know where I was told this. I wish I could reference it. I was told, but point being, I was told to look up the lore that surrounds the movie before seeing it. That there's more of a payoff, that it takes an already great movie and gives you a little extra. And I can attest to that.
Just watch Arthur. Same thing.
The movie with...
No, the show on PBS.
The movie with Russell Brand.
Oh, God.
The remake of the old movie Arthur.
Oh, God. That stretch when they tried to make him a thing. God help them. They really did try.
What, Russell Brand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had a stretch of like 4 years where he was in like every major released comedy.
Americans were kind of like,
mm. Yep. <Yeah. laughs> That's enough of that.
Moving on. Green Knight later on in the week. We have an interview with Andrew Rannells. Andrew Rannells. Our interview with the man. Here it is. We are very pleased to be joined by one of my absolute favorites, Andrew Rannells. How are you? Very excited to talk to you. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Of course. This could be a monumental interview. I'm in a 115-year-old beach house, and the chair I'm sitting in might be just as old. It may break in the middle of this interview. So if I like...
It's creaking.
If I just like fall, it's not
I
a
I
want to
see that.
Yeah.
I'm going to need that video.
I'm not going to force it to happen. Yeah. Let's talk off the top. Modern Love season 2, writing and directing episode 2, Modern Love. Again, season 2, first season came out 2019. One of my favorites, John Carney, very much involved. Yep. That's the executive producer. Sing Street is all time. One of
very
my favorites.
Nice.
But
yep.
Modern Love, for those who may not know, and of course, you writing and directing, and I believe first director's credit. What can you tell us about that side of things for you?
Well, that was pretty crazy. You know, I had written this essay. It's a story from my own life. I had written it for Modern Love in the Times a few years ago. And then when I knew that season 2 was happening, I sort of gently reminded them of my essay and that I, you know, just sort of threw it out there that I would love to be included if they were considering things. And they asked me to adapt it, and I did. And then John Carney, I was talking to him about the script, and he was like, I think you should actually direct this too. And I hadn't thought about that. Was not on my radar at all. And John said, he was like, you know, it's your story. You're in a very unique position to get to tell it. So I think you should just do it. So the more I thought about it and the more that I talked to other people about it and talked to John about it, it just seemed like an opportunity that I could not pass up and should not pass up. So I said, yes, please.
There was no hesitation maybe where you're like, oh, they're going to let me write this. And they say, oh, direct it too. And you go, oh, maybe not. There was no moment where I don't know.
Well, I wasn't, you know, I didn't realize how protective I was over it. Because there was a moment early on when they said, we would love to include your essay in the second season. And they were talking about writers. And I then was like, well, no, I want to do it. And I think they were a little cautious that they were like, okay, so you've never written a, you know, produced screenplay before, but all right. But they very generously gave me the space to try that out. And then liked what I did. And then by that point, when John said that, I was like, yes, I should probably just see this through and I should see the complete, you know, I should close the, you know, end the story rather than handing it off to somebody else and just have the full experience. Cause this is a story, you know, it's not only from my life, but the telling of it has now been years. You know, it was first an essay and then it was a chapter in my book, Too Much Is Not Enough. And now, working on it. And we filmed this for Modern Love about a year ago. So it's very exciting to finally get to share it. It feels like it's been a long time.
8 half-hour episodes again, all on Amazon Prime Video, August 13th, Modern Love, and talks about just that love, just in different ways, shapes, and form. Do you have the itch now, like the directing itch? Like, is this a new thing you're gonna start doing more?
Yeah, I would like to. I mean, I think the unique thing about this opportunity was it was, it's an anthology. They're standalone episodes. They don't have to relate back to the rest of the series necessarily. And it was a very personal story to me. So it felt like in a lot of ways, doing like a short film. It's a little over 20 minutes long. So yeah, it felt like I did a short film rather than, you know, an episode of television in a lot of ways. So I would like to do it again, but I feel like what I learned was I have to be very passionate about it and feel very connected to it. And I don't think that I'm at a point where I could just sort of be a director for hire just yet. Mm. I feel like I would need to be somehow connected to the story to tell it.
Personally vested. I like that. What can you tell us about your episode specifically? Like, give us your pitch for your episode.
All right. So this is a, you know, true story. It happened when I was 22 years old. I was living in New York City, had been here for a few years, was still trying to figure out what it was to be gay and an adult man in New York and what it was to date and what that was supposed to look like and feel like. And I was on a date with this guy. And we were kind of hitting it off, but not exactly. And we ended up having sex, and it was sort of like neither here nor there. It just sort of felt like something that we felt like, I guess this is how dates end. I guess this is what we're doing. And I felt a little weird about it. And then while he was still in my apartment, I looked at my phone and I had missed all of these phone calls, and it was my family calling me throughout the night, telling me that my father had had a heart attack and was in a coma, and he was most likely going to die. And then later did die. But I got all of that information while there was basically a stranger in my apartment that then all of a sudden became very clear to me. I didn't want to do that. I don't want you here. Please leave my apartment. I need to take care of this. And so I got to, you know, sort of go back and reimagine that story, not only from the 22-year-old version of myself, but also what the hell was he thinking all night? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I kind of for a long time sort of flattered myself to think that he was probably like super into it. And the reality was maybe not. Maybe he was not as into it as I thought he was. And certainly thinking about how I behaved with him when I got that information, you know, I was not so kind in asking him to leave. But then sometimes as I would remember it, I was like, well, maybe I wasn't that bad. And this was a unique chance to go back and really sort of look at both sides of that story and try to figure out what both of their experience was.
It's a fascinating essay for those of you that haven't read it before. And one thing that I'm excited to see put to screen, I think, is the moment you describe in it. We like, you know, you're sitting there, you're getting this. We just got this information from, I believe it was your sisters or your almost brother-in-law, right? And you're like, you're sitting there, you have like your highlights in your hair, like, oh, why don't I have these highlights in this hair? And like this guy, Brad, comes over and he's like half naked, standing there like Winnie the Pooh with no pants on or whatever. Yep. And he's like trying to talk to you, and you're like you almost have this sensory overload moment. And that part in the essay, I think, was so fascinating. And that is what I'm personally super excited to see on screen, among many other parts from that story, which I think are great, because like you're saying, the almost natural conclusion of the date where it's like, this is not really, I think you described it as like almost like non-passionate sex, more mechanical than anything, right?
Yeah. 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 Cause it felt like, you know, that's what we are supposed to do. So I think, you know, the big takeaway, as painful as all of that was and as awkward as all of that was that night, I think, you know, what I talk about in the essay, especially like living in this apartment that wasn't mine, it was a sublet, and living in a neighborhood that I didn't love, putting these dumb highlights in my hair in an effort to try to be cool. I had a job that I didn't like I was 22. And as much as I felt like everything was in front of me, it also felt like nothing was lining up. Nothing was working out the way that I thought it was going to. And after that night, I don't know, I just felt very, and you know, my father dying, I think obviously, you know, that's enough to sort of make anyone kind of look at where they are in life. But I, you know, I got myself out of Astoria. I cut those highlights out of my hair. I got myself a new job. And I just sort of tried to like reattack my life after that point and figure out what do I really want and how to be, I guess, for lack of a better term, like how to be more authentic about it and stop trying to be something you're not. Stop trying to be what you think you're supposed to do. And if you don't want to have sex with somebody, don't have sex with them. Like, You don't have to do that. That's not what being a man is or being a gay man is. Like, only do it if you want to. Like, that was another big lesson.
You've worked with so many different directors across, I feel, so many different mediums, more than just about anybody. Who do you think you learned the most from as far as going to this experience as a director?
Little bits from a lot of people. I think my big takeaway from Ryan Murphy, which I've always really liked, and from James Lapine that I worked with on Broadway, was how to be succinct with your direction. Because I, as an actor, sometimes get impatient when directors kind of talk around things or try to get you to find it for yourself. I don't want to find it for myself. I want you to tell me what to do. That's the kind of actor I am. Nancy Myers is very good at this too. I was lucky enough to get to work with her, and it's not that they're unkind. It's just they're direct. So it can be as simple as, I need you to say that louder. Not, what if we put more urgency in it? And what if there's, I'm just like, what do you want? You want it faster or do you want it louder? and that was something that I just learned from working with those directors, is there's a way to be kind, but also be direct and just ask for what you need. And so that was a big lesson that I brought to the set. And I was happy to hear that the actors that I worked with appreciated that, because we were also, you know, this is all of our first job back during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. This was last September that we did this. So I think everybody was a little nervous as to how it was going to work. Not only was it, you know, my first time directing, forget working with a first time director. It was like, are we putting ourselves at risk getting COVID by doing this job? And that was a real concern for everyone. So I think everybody was, you know, cautiously optimistic that it was going to be fine. And luckily it did turn out to be fine, but it was a strange time to go back to work.
Did you catch yourself doing any like directing tropes that you said, maybe in your time, like, I'll never do that if I direct? You're like, uh-oh.
You had the best one for sure, right?
I fell into the trap.
You know what?
Big megaphone. Yeah.
I did buy a Filson jacket like a fucking idiot. And I joked with my friend Zuzana, who's in the episode. I was like, I bought this jacket in Brooklyn, and it you know, it's like, it's such a douchey director coat. I was like, I'm doing it. And I got it. And I wore the hell out of that jacket on set. And I needed it. It was chilly. So I guess I did that. I definitely dressed, because Nancy Myers gave me, I remember when I did this movie, The Intern, with her, and she told me that, and a lot of people say this, but you know, like who am I thinking of? Anyway, it was basically like, come up with a uniform for yourself while you're working. And Nancy had told me that that's sort of what she does, is she just like comes up with like a version of one outfit to wear, because it's just like one less thing to think about. And it's just, you know, so you just get up and go, and then you don't have to, not that that takes up a ton of mental space, but you know what I mean? Just like make it a little bit easier for yourself. So that was my version of that, was to wear that Filson jacket.
Like, I got huge. I'm trying to think of other directors who have uniforms. That's going to now ruin my day. I'm going to be thinking of that all day.
You know what? When you're looking for it, if you go back and look at it photos, like there is a version of that with a lot of people. They start to wear like a similar thing.
I just see George Lucas's high-waisted jeans in my head right now. That's like, there, that's, you go.
Like, I worked with Paul Feig, and Paul wears a suit every day.
Yes.
Usually a three-piece suit.
A beautiful suit.
And he told me that he went through different versions of that. Like when they were doing Freaks and Geeks, he would wear like a different Hawaiian shirt every day. And like, that was his thing. And then when we were doing A Simple Favor, it was these three-piece suits.
I mean, that's such a
sometimes with a vanity cane.
That's such a sexy movie, though. Like, you can't show up to that wearing Hawaiian suit. You know what I mean? Like,
you got to wear a suit. Yeah,
exactly. Wear a suit for that. Blake Lively showing up wearing like a dickie and all this fancy, beautiful costumes and wardrobe and stuff. You can't show up wearing anything bad.
Yeah, she's just a working mom. Yeah.
we just in studio had Henry Golding, and we were talking Snake Eyes.
Oh, nice.
An absolutely lovely man and fascinating story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Coming from TV hosting.
I know it was. And when we did, they had already shot Crazy Rich Asians, but it hadn't come out yet. Mm-hmm. So he was telling us about it. And it was just, now it's just sort of funny looking back, because it was so successful that he was like, yeah, I'm doing this movie. And all these people in it. And we're like, that's so cool, Henry. And then here it is. It's like global phenomenon. It's like, oh, that's the movie.
He said he told us to, he like rejected the role like 10 times. Like, yeah, I just didn't want to do it. And it's like, yeah, you would have, that would have been a real fuck up on your part, Mr. Henry. Yeah. I'll tell you what.
That would have been a mistake.
Yeah, I just like how you segued us for the, just to talk about the wardrobe on that movie, because again, that movie was so sleek and so stylish. How much of a priority do you think that was, just for, not even just for Paul Feig, but for the entire crew involved? Because I think that did add to the ambiance so well, you know?
Yeah, I think that Blake came in with some very specific ideas. And I know, and she has said this before in interviews, that she was sort of taking inspiration from Paul specifically. That, like, because he is always so tailored and very, you know, Savile Row looking, you know, that she wanted that. She wanted that to be her look. And then I think that informed Anna, obviously, and like the way that her character sort of progressed, that she started off as this very sort of like twin set wearing stay at home mom. And then like, where was she going to go? So I think that was really informative to both those characters.
You were so, so funny in that too. Were you aware when you signed on to that, that like the ending, you were going to essentially be the coup de grace on Blake Lively? Like, hey, I'm signing up for this like very funny, very witty little like, you know, romantic mystery thriller. Oh, by the way, you're going to run over Blake Lively at the end of it.
Yeah. Paul, that's sort of how Paul pitched it. Because I remember when I got the script and they said, you know, he very kindly was like, would like you to play this part. It might not seem like much initially, but spoiler, you do get to run over Blake Lively. Cool. And I was like, oh, all right. That's a twist.
Yes.
I'll take it.
And deliver a great one-liner after the Prius, the silent killer. Great line or whatever that was.
Reminder as well, Modern Love, August 13th on Amazon Prime Video. Though I want to shift out of the movie theaters quick, cause I do want to talk about a thing that I'm sure you never talk about. The funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. And that's Book of Mormon. I unfortunately did not see you in Book of Mormon. Did not get the chance to do that, but I did see it. And we've actually talked to, I feel like, a bunch of your co-stars.
Josh Gad.
Josh Gad. We've had Matt Bomer on a ton of times. Mm-hmm. The Josh Gad interview was the most terrifying interview we've had on the show, because there's a because
he's such a monster.
There's a horny version of Olaf that we have on our show, like a character, and we did it for him and he loved it. So
yeah,
that was like it was a huge. We don't know if Disney like killed him over that, but like it was a very But Book of Mormon, what in the world? And I'm not sure, you know, I imagine you don't, but I have to ask, how do we get the Book of Mormon in the same way we have Cats and Hamilton? Like, the fact that I can't talk about it unless somebody has seen it on Broadway, like it kills me. Cause like, I'm not just saying that cause you're here. Like, it is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I mean, I agree. I think it's, you know, amazingly funny. And I think Trey and Matt and Bobby Lopez, who wrote it, you know, we were regularly just blown away by what we were getting away with on Broadway. I mean, I had been a part of some Broadway shows. I mean, the first Broadway show I did was Hairspray, which is John Waters, which a lot of people was like, how the hell is that going to work? And that was a big hit. And then Jersey Boys, which was very traditional, but also really played to like a straight audience of men who didn't think they liked musicals, who were really brought in by the music of the Four Seasons and loved that story. And it was like Goodfellas, the musical, essentially. And so that was odd. But this was, you know, beyond any of my expectations, that it just reached such a wild audience and such a wide audience. And I think the secret behind it that Trey and Matt have talked about is that they love Broadway musicals. They love, I mean, if you look at, you know, South Park is packed with music, and you know, Team America has that whole crazy musical. I mean, all those musical sequences in it, they love musicals. And if you know musicals well, you will know that the Book of Mormon is just lovingly sort of ripping off very traditional moments from big successful musicals. So like, you know, I Believe that I sang in that show is essentially I Have Confidence from The Sound of Music. And Bobby was very clear about that he was like, this is what we're basing it on. And, you know, there's a song called You and Me, But Mostly Me that we sang in the first act. And that is The Wizard and I from Wicked. And Bobby was like, That's just what we're doing. There's numbers, you know, from The King and I. There's numbers from The Music Man. Like, they're just such fans of the genre that they created their own version of it, which I think is why, I mean, it works because it's hilarious and it's dirty and it's unexpected. But for traditional musical theater lovers, they watched that and were, I think they even maybe subliminally were like, why do I relate to this so much? And it was because they took that format and sort of twisted it around and put it on its head.
Do you think, and last thing on Book of Mormon quick, because I know we have to go in a second, but do you think it can adapt, and beyond what I said, just like the Broadway version on screen, do you think it can adapt to like an actual movie? Cause like we just saw In the Heights, like, do you think it would work?
I don't know. I don't know if it would work. And I think that, you know, for years we had sort of talked about it. I mean, you know, I think Josh and I have certainly aged out of playing 19-year-old Mormon missionaries. Over the years, there was talk about, do we animate it? Could we animate it? Could it be, you know, is it something else? But I think ultimately, and Trey has said this, that, you know, what they wanted to do was they wanted to write a really kick-ass Broadway musical. And that's what they did. Mm-hmm. And to make it into a movie is a much different thing. And it's just a different genre that you can't get away with the same thing. Like, you couldn't represent Uganda in the way we did on Broadway. You have to show Uganda in a very literal way. Mm-hmm. And that's probably not as funny. Like, that's not going to land the same way. The way that we were able to sort of portray those missionaries, that's very broad. It's not going to work the same way on camera. Like, it doesn't, the two things don't match up. So they would need to go back and write a whole different story. And I don't know if either one of them really wants to do that, which is, I mean, I just really, I respect them both, and Bobby too, so much that, you know, they don't, I think they have the confidence just to let it stand as it is and be like, you know what, we wanted to write a Broadway musical and that's our Broadway musical. It doesn't need to be six different things. It can just be that. And that's great. So I just love it. I love that they did that.
Last thing really quick, you've done a lot of voice roles as well over your career. And one voice role you had was an Invincible. And I love your character in that. You had a fairly heartbreaking episode. The one where they go to the college visit and all of that. I love that one so much. I just wanted to ask if there's anything you can tell us about season two of that, because so many of our fans I know are huge, huge fans of Invincible.
I'm so happy to hear that. Yeah, I was really thrilled to get to be part of that. And I thought that the storyline that I got to be a part of was really sort of unexpected, and I didn't know much about it. And I was just very, very excited to get to be a part of it. I don't know anything about season two. And in fact, we recorded that first season years ago, and it just takes, you know, animation takes a long time to pull together. But I'm game. I'm down for whatever they got up their sleeve. I'm right there.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Good to hear it.
Thank you so much for stopping by with us. Again, you're absolutely one of my favorites, and this was an
thank you.
Treat.
Same here.
Modern Love. Check it out. All 8 episodes, August 13th, but I'm sure they're all great, but keep an eye on episode 2, of course. That's mm-hmm. the one.
Thank you very much.
Hone in. Thank you so much, Andrew Rannells. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Awesome interview with Andrew Rannells.
Cool-ass mustache. You can't see it while you're listening, but he had a very cool mustache.
Great stash. Great person. Oh, insanely talented. Blast.
Mm-hmm.
Just a blast. Yeah, as talented as any actor in Hollywood, I think.
As I love throwing out the word multi-hyphenate, and that man is the epitome of a multi-hyphenate.
Just amazing. And I like the very look. We kind of you asked that question, kind of the answer already, but I like getting it from him as well. We talked to Josh Gad about script to screen or stage to screen with Book of Mormon.
Andrew, is Girls coming back?
We didn't ask that one for you. I'm sorry. You know, I saw Jesse Eisenberg drive by me on a bike the other day in Soho in Manhattan.
King.
Jesse, it's me.
We're friends.
We do the podcast. It's me. Jesse, come back.
Remember when he said, I heard about that yesterday on the Barstool Sports Center in another interview?
Yeah.
What a pure fucking amazing person. Still got to give him his trophy. Still have to give him the trophy. draft time. We'll be drafting captains. Trill, the czar tonight was actually found by you.
It's my buddy.
It's your buddy. What are we going to call him?
His name is David. Let's just use his real name. He's been my friend since 2010, maybe 2008.
I
can't like
check on the numbers for this.
I thought you were about to say 2020. Okay.
No. Good guy, though.
All right. So Dave gets the first pick, then Trill, then myself, then Ken Jack. We're reversing it from the last one we did, which was the Olympics draft, which people said Ken Jack won. So congratulations to Ken Jack.
Oh, yeah.
And our very, I just looked at the comments and people liked Ken Jack's. people were like, Ken Jack won. Okay, he won.
Done. One person, all I needed.
Trill, captains. Pretty wide open field here.
Yeah.
Who's going first?
I think this is a pretty good 1-1 pick. It's Captain America. I think David's taking Captain America, which is a pretty popular pick, but it also is a can't go wrong thing.
Yeah, he is the captain.
He's America's ass, as they said in the movie.
So you're taking, so that's Chris Evans' Captain America, just to be clear.
I didn't know there was different paths of Captain America that David could take, but he's taking Captain America. If you want to split it up in different iterations of Captain America, be my guest.
That's fair. Okay. Captain America, great first pick. Trill, you have the second pick, though.
I'm taking Captain Ron, played by Kurt Russell in the 1992 movie Captain Ron. I don't know why Captain Ron has stuck with me so much throughout the years, but it is a movie I think about all the time just because Captain Ron is very horny. Mm. And I think it's a great Kurt Russell character too. I don't think it's a great movie, but I think it's a great Kurt Russell character. It's 23% on Rotten Tomatoes, but I love Captain Ron. He's a dirtbag.
He had a great mullet going on in that movie, yeah. Right?
Well, he had an eye patch, and then I think he had a glass eye. I remember it rolling out at one point in the movie.
You're just thinking of fucking Escape from New York.
Well, he shows up at the end, and he doesn't have an eye patch. And then the family is like, what?
Captain Ron.
All Disney right. Movie, Buena Vista Pictures.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Captain Ron. All right. This has to be expected for my pick. I'm going Captain Crunch.
Mm.
He's just crunchitizing people left and right.
One of the best small forwards to ever play the game.
Yeah. I also love a good discussion about people when they say the cereal will cut the roof of their mouth.
I use my teeth.
That's what I am.
I'm built different.
I mean, it's not like a common be here that people say like Captain Crunch. They're so sharp. I don't know. I've learned
like a trillion of them. Yeah, it'll probably happen.
I've learned how to eat cereal in my day.
People are like, I hate stepping on Legos. I'm like, yeah, me too. It's why we pick them up.
That's why I don't step on them.
Put them back in a Tupperware thing.
That's why. Yeah. However, I will say the best one, in my opinion, is Captain Crunch with Crunch Berries. Captain Crunch and Crunch Berries is a cereal that I could eat an entire box of at any moment. I will feel like ass, but it will be delicious. I love Captain Crunch. Captain Crunch. Ken Jack, you have two captains in a row here.
Okay, my first one, I'll take Captain Jack Sparrow. Very endearing. I think that's something where I hear the word captain. America is number one. Then I think like Captain Jack Sparrow is probably the next one like that comes to mind immediately. So put Captain Jack Sparrow, and then I'll back to back him with Captain Han Solo, good old Han, my good friend Han Solo.
I love a good pronunciation of it as Han
with a very soft A or hard A, whatever you want to define it. But yeah, I'm going to go with him. Introduction, I believe, in New Hope is like I'm the captain of the Millennium Falcon. He's a captain. It's a captain bona fide Millennium. Fact.
Captain
very, very endearing, extremely cool guy. Arguably one of the most badass rogues in all of movie or any media history. And I love him. There's nothing to dislike but old Captain Hanny.
It's just such a good line delivery, too, because he just says it in such a nonchalant fuck you way. Also, we tweeted this out from our LCD today. Trill, this is a short clip, but an all-time, I know you've seen this, an all-time clip from Harrison Ford. Here we go.
Did you shoot Greedo first, or did Greedo shoot you first? I don't care.
I love that guy.
Every time I laugh.
I don't care.
I laugh.
It's so genuine, too. It's so genuine. It's not playing enough at all. He genuinely does not give a shit.
He just could not care less.
Great fictional captain, bad real life captain, by the way. Harrison Ford.
not great.
Notably not great flyer.
All right, I'm up next. My pick is, I don't know if this counts. No, this counts. He's a captain. He's a captain. He's an American hero. He's an icon. Man. What?
Can Jack dislike him?
His first name is Chesley.
Taking old Chesley.
Captain Chesley Burnett Sully Sullenberger III.
Oh, Chesley,
aren't you that fucking guy? Hey, you cockeyed fuck. Aren't you that guy?
Aren't you Sully?
I'm actually Tom Hanks.
You're fucking Sully. Trill.
The hell is that?
Another captain.
I'm going to take Paul McCartney. He was the captain of the Beatles.
What the fuck?
Sorry. He wrote the best songs.
What the fuck is that?
Can look at this draft and be like,
biggest
what the fuck
cheating
happened?
Pick I've ever heard. he was the captain of
fucking
the cheater. Beatles.
He was the captain of the Beatles.
He was
the guy in the Beatles.
You're such a fucking bullshitter.
All right, whatever.
Put on the graphic and just do parentheses captain of the Beatles.
Yeah,
it makes so many people mad.
No, he probably gonna have to do that.
What about John?
Paul McCartney in parentheses Beatles captain.
Have you heard of John? Yeah, Paul is better than John. Sorry.
Dumb pick. I love that.
All right, your buddy goes up two in a row.
He's going to take Captain Planet.
Oh, yeah, great job that guy's been doing.
Captain, yeah, Captain.
Sorry, he just hasn't been around because they lost their rings. And then the next pick is Derek Jeter, the captain.
Fuck!
Yeah.
That's a good pick.
I think that's a really good pick.
That's a good pick. Dang. Ah. All right. I don't like this. We need more czars who make bad picks.
Yeah.
That's the problem is like, I trust his judgment. So he sends back a very good list.
Dang. All right. Okay. Trill, you're up next.
Gosh, I already got this.
Yeah,
draft.
Just a wide list for you to pick from. Paul McCartney.
I'm trying to figure out another way to cheat in the draft, but I'm thinking I'm going to bring it back to earth. I think I'm going to. See, the problem is I want to take Captain Morgan, but I don't particularly enjoy Captain Morgan. I feel like
I don't
like
either.
Graphic though.
That's like I feel like that's a pick you make when you're like 21. You're like Captain Morgan, baby.
Admiral, you're higher rank too.
The alcohol brand we know and love. Let's see. I think I'm going to take Captain Phillips.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You just took a very exciting skill position player with Paul McCartney, and you picked a. Like an offensive tackle who is never going to start. Like he's just a depth pick.
Do I get another pick?
No. What?
Pick another Tom. What the fuck? Why are you trying to triple cheat this draft, dude?
Can I go? Can I go again?
Can I unearned pick again, please?
I'm going to pick. This is a steal in the third. I'm picking Captain James Tiberius Kirk.
Guys, I was getting into trouble. He's a good captain, though.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, no captain got in more trouble.
Can I pick again?
Why?
I don't want Captain Phillips.
That's not how this works.
It's too bad. You already picked him.
Yeah, you picked Paul McCartney. Moving on.
The fucking Beatles, dude.
No. Can I pick again?
All right. Pick again. Actually, no. Ken Jack has to make his pick, and then you can pick again.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of what Trill wants so I could try and cuck him. I won't take one he wants. I'll take... let's go Captain Rex. I love Captain Rex. One of my favorite Star Wars characters ever created. Just talking about him on a Bad Batch recap with Clem and Robbie. You can see that on our YouTube page. Phenomenal character. And it might not be one that's familiar or may not win me on the graphic or anything, but I feel like Captain Rex is like a if you know, you know type character. And he's awesome. Very cool.
Yeah. Character. Rex has to become a bit of a big boy soon, though.
Mm-hmm.
Rex becomes beefy.
You can get beefed up. Little tuna can.
All right, Cho, now you can redo your pick.
I'm going to pick the guy in Captain Phillips who says, I'm the captain now.
Oh, yeah.
Because
he is the captain
after Captain Phillips.
That's a good pick.
Fuck. Damn. I wish. Imagine if I got you on that, if I talked you on that while you're waiting.
And it also was a pick on David's list.
Oh, that's mean.
But not the joke. Hey.
You fucking leeched his
pick. He got his top picks.
So you not only cheated by getting Paul McCartney, but you cheated by getting to redo your pick, and you cheated that by also stealing one of David's picks.
Look, I've been doing this podcast almost 400 episodes. I get to go off the rails on one draft.
Ken Jack, you have another pick.
I'll do one of my favorite fictional pirate captains. I'll do Captain Flint from Black Sail specifically. To use that version on the graphic. I want my fucking Captain Flint. Toby Stevens, I believe, plays him in Black Sail. Amazing character. Again, Black Sail is probably one of the best shows I've ever watched in my entire life, and it will get zero airtime because it was on fucking Stars or whatever. So, amazing show if you're looking for something to watch. Captain Flint, Black Sails.
You do like Black Sails. The only thing I know about Black Sails is they played the song Sail by AWOL Nation before it.
No. The guy like invented a fucking instrument to make, or not invented, he like revived a 1600s instrument to make. The guy Bear McCready, who did their soundtrack, he's like an act now much more prolific. He has this instrument called the hurdy-gurdy that he used for it. It's like this big ass fucking like guitar that you have to like wind up while you play. It's bizarre. It's so cool though.
My follow-up is going to be Captain James Gordon. I know he's a commissioner at some point, but he's definitely a police captain for much of Batman lore. Jim Gordon. Was he captain in the first one, and then he becomes commissioner in the second one, in The Dark Knight?
Good question.
He's Captain Gordon in Batman Begins, right?
Trust the Gordon's fisherman.
Next up, Trill.
I'm taking... a free solo on El Capitan.
Nice. That's another. You're winning the draft.
Yeah, but fucking cheating.
I mean, I should take the rock formation itself or the activity of free soloing. I don't know. It may have been too limited. Do I go next?
No, your buddy.
What the fuck?
Your buddy finishes again. Yeah.
He's taking Captain Rex from Clone Wars.
That's what I already fucking picked, dude.
He's taking Captain Steve Zissou.
Steve Zissou?
Zissou, sorry. Yeah, from the movie. The
Life Aquatic of Steve Zissou?
Yeah, the Wes Anderson movie. I'm sorry, dude. I've not pronounced that name in 20 years.
I don't think I ever say it right. You know what I just haven't been saying right? And we get corrected for fucking everything. Fair. You know what I've never said right? It's Shang-Chi. It's not Shang-Chi.
Yeah. I thought that we have been saying Shang-Chi.
Fuck no. We've been saying Shang-Chi. Absolutely been saying, no one corrected us.
No, I definitely was saying Shang-Chi because they did Simu Liu had a tweet where he basically put out a pronunciation guide for all the characters and the movie. And after that, I switched to saying Shang-Chi. Him and the names of the actual actors too.
Like, I'm just surprised. No, because we corrected on names. Fair. But I guess I hadn't been saying that one right. Shang-Chi. I heard the Hat Man say it.
More people should do that, by the way. Make more pronunciation guides for dumb people us that just never pronounce anything right.
The NBA draft, by the way, they did these really uncomfortable videos where they had people like, they had people like celebrities congratulating draft picks, but it was all very generic and pre-planned. So that's like Simu Liu was like, hey, it's me. I'm in the new movie Shang-Chi. Congratulations. You've done it. You're the man. Like it was always like they were so fucking generic and uncomfortable. Not a great idea.
Like 2K or something.
Yeah. It was not a great idea. Trill, other pick for your last pick for your friend.
Oh, my last pick for my friend, not my pick.
Yep.
Okay. He is going to pick Captain Munnerlyn from the Carolina Panthers.
That was my last pick. Damn. Mm. Captain Munnerlyn is one of the greatest
Munnerlyn
names.
Or Munnerlyn?
Captain Munnerlyn. It's one of the greatest names ever for
a
defensive player. Incredible stuff. Trill, your last pick.
I'm taking a Carhartt hat.
Okay, we expand.
Cap.
It's a tan cap. Or cap that's tan.
It doesn't mean necessarily whatever.
our intern Goochman just messaged me gross.
I bet Fred Durst has a tan hat. See tan hat.
Have you seen what Fred Durst looks like?
Yeah, that was bizarre.
Yeah, he looks different, but he's also like 55 now. But he looked. People are, I guess, like people were shocked when he looked like he did when the Fan came out. Remember, he had that big beard.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of his thing now to like switch up the way he looks. After so long, like you just have this recognizable image of Fred Durst wearing a backwards red baseball hat.
Yeah, that's my built-in image.
Like,
yeah,
take it to the Matthews Bridge.
My last pick is Captain D's seafood restaurant.
Captain D's Nuts.
Let's go. Let's go.
I was trying to lead Jeff into it, and you just came out and said it. I was trying to set him up.
We don't do subtlety here, dude. Come on. Yeah,
which one's better, Long John Silver's or Captain D's?
Captain D's not even close.
Captain D's what?
Captain D's.
Captain D's?
Captain D's on the piss.
All right. Ken Jack, last pick.
I'll do one of my favorite Smash characters, Captain Falcon. Falcon Punch? Hard to beat that, right?
I mean, pretty cool character, like in his initial appearance was like F-Zero, which was like a cool game at the time. But if you go back and look at clips of F-Zero, he was F-Zero, right?
I've never played any game he was in that wasn't a Smash or Brawl or
that makes one sense. Of those. Well, F-Zero is not like, I feel like the last F-Zero was like GameCube or like the last major one. I'm probably wrong. It's probably like advanced Game Boy or whatever. He did the Falcon Punch though, right? That was his thing.
Yeah, Falcon Punch. Falcon Kick was okay, but Falcon Punch was the one. It did like insane amount of damage, but you had to time it so right to actually hit somebody. Small ass range. Same with Ganondorf's thing, but I think they're supposed to be like clone players or whatever.
F-Zero had a great soundtrack. I remember this one song on it.
Sounds
right in my brain.
Should have taken Picard, but whatever. I like that.
That's it. Green Knight. He's a captain. If Paul McCartney's a captain, anybody can be a captain.
That may have been his rank in the Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Or like he could have been the captain of the Yellow Submarine. Like you just don't know.
Justify it all you want, my friend.
He was the captain of the Beatles.
Paul,
we need you to do the coin flip to decide which band goes first. You're the captain.
Paul always did the pre-live show coin flip. Yeah.
Yep.
That's it. For Ken, Jack, and Trill, I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save big money at
Menards. Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.